Track 1. Introduction. Welcome to the Otley-Chevin Geology Trail. During this audio trail, you will find out more about how the rocks of Otley-Chevin were formed during Carboniferous times 300 million years ago, and how the landscape has been modified by ice in the last 20,000 years. There are 8 places on the trail where you should stop to see features of interest. They are marked by carved stones. So stop and listen to the next track at each marker stone. Footpaths are generally wide and easy to follow and are not steep. In some places, the route is marked by wooden posts with the geology trail symbol. There is one short section of path near marker stone 7 which is steep and narrow, but there is an alternative, gentler path nearby. 8-figure grid references are provided for each marker stone to help you find your location, if you're using a GPS device. Many of the paths are muddy after wet weather, so it's a good idea to wear boots or waterproof shoes. The top of the ridge at Surprise View is very exposed to cold winds, so carry jackets and warm clothes with you. There is a free leaflet describing the geology trail. It is available from the Tourist Information Office in Otley Library and the White House Cafe. The leaflet can also be downloaded from the Friends of Chevin Forest website, www.chevinforest.co.uk, or the West Yorkshire Geology Trust website at www.wyorksgeologytrust.org. The trail will take you about 1.5 hours to complete, walking from East Chevin Quarry car park and back. Allow time for resting and enjoying the views across Wharfdale. If you are not already here, start your walk at East Chevin Quarry Car Park at grid reference SE2121-4448. The next track should be listened to at marker stone 1, which is about 100 metres up the footpath, grid reference SE2109-4447. Track 2. The Moon and the Tides.
Hello. My name's Susan, and I'm interested in rocks and landscapes in the Otley area. You've arrived at marker stone 1, where you can find out about tidal laminites. The carving on the marker stone shows waves with a moon above, to indicate that the laminites were deposited as a result of tidal activity. You'll notice in the track that there are thin beds, or laminae, of sandstone called laminites. These thin beds were deposited in a coastal area of the Carboniferous Delta. Tides were probably higher than they are today, so the water would have come in fast over sand flats, as in present-day Morecambe Bay. Probably each fine lamination represents a single tide, so you can count how many days it took to deposit the layers. The structure of these thin beds can be seen in an exposed low cliff 5 metres to your left. It's uncommon anywhere in the world to see rocks that represent tidal sediments. Please do not damage these rocks, as they're good examples of an unusual feature and of great interest to geologists. Neil Aitkenhead will tell you a bit more about how the rocks were formed.
Well, it's very unusual for a thickness of rocks, such as we see here, a metre plus, isn't it, to be laid down so quickly. Normally we think of a metre of rock as perhaps taking tens if not hundreds of years to be deposited. But here each layer represents a tide, so we've got 2 tides per 24 hours. So this is very rapid deposition. Between each sandstone lamina there is in fact a layer of mud, and the layer of mud represents very slack water when the tide has been turning. And then as the tidal current gets going again, it brings in more sand. These rocks were once obviously sand on the seashore. They were then buried by literally hundreds of metres of other sands and different sediments, muds. So this would have once been about 5 or 10 kilometres below the Earth's surface. And in that sort of position, there for many years, it would get somewhat heated up, it would get all the water squeezed out of it, and this process would turn it into rock. And then the whole lot, all the overlying rocks have been eroded away, especially during glacial times, which is another story, and these have been brought back to the surface again. and they're now there as we see them today.
Thank you, Neil.
Continue up the path for about 250 metres until you reach marker stone 2 at grid reference SE2087-4439. As you walk further up the path, you are passing through the spoil tips of quarry waste. Listen to the description of the rocks and the history of quarrying on the Chevin.
The quarry was excavated in a sandstone called the Addingham Edge Grit, so named because the same sandstone is exposed at Addingham Edge, some 14 kilometres to the west. The rocks of the Otley Chevin area are Upper Carboniferous in age, so they're about 315 million years old. These rocks were laid down in deltas on the edge of a large continent with mountains to the north and south. Sands and muds were deposited in shallow water by rivers. After the sediment was formed close to sea level, they were buried by hundreds of metres of sediment and compressed so that the water was squeezed out. This water, moving through the sediments, carried minerals which cemented the sand and mud grains together to make sandstones and mudstones. Shortly after that, the rocks were tilted towards the south, so the rock in the quarry dips towards the Aire Valley at about 6 degrees, if you measure from the horizontal.
Hi, my name's Bob, and I've walked on Otley Chevin for many years. East Chevin Quarry is also known as Pelston Cross Quarry, and historically was used as a common quarry, which meant that the land was set aside for the use of the inhabitants of the local township. The stone from here was used for the foundation of the Houses of Parliament, and also for the maintenance of East Chevin Road. The rock was quarried for crushed grit, for use as sand and gravel, although the rock is also suitable for building stone and sets. Imagine the quarry as a noisy, bustling place with large blocks of rock being taken off the quarry faces with cranes and crowbars. The stone would have been split into manageable sizes using mallets and wedges and then shaped into building stones by stonemasons with hammers and chisels. Any irregular stones would have been used for building field walls, and any waste left over was probably used for making tracks and roads. It was last quarried by local people in 1920. Maps from 1800 show many small-scale quarries across much of the scarp slope of the Chevin. Most of the stone from the Chevin was described by stonemasons as Bramley Falls stone, although it's not as good as the grit stones that came from Bramley, Horsforth or Guiseley, which were favoured for finer quality masonry work. The main use of Chevin stone was railway embankments, bridge footings, defensive seawalls, local houses and civic buildings, roofing slates and millstones. Track 3. Otley in Carboniferous Times.
You can now see above you some rocky crags of Addingham Edge Grit at Marker Stone 2. The carving on the marker stone shows a river delta. The rocks you can see are the result of mud and sand that was deposited in a tropical river delta when the Chevin was part of a landmass located near the equator. Layers of sediment were laid one upon another and then compressed over a long time period to create solid rock. Here you can take a short detour up a steep and narrow path along the base of the cliff. In about 50 metres, this path rejoins the main route. Take care if the path is wet. You can see many of the features from the main footpath. The Addingham Edge Grit is made of sand grains. With a hand lens, you'll see quartz grains, which are grey in colour, while feldspars are pink, white or cream. All rocks are composed of minerals, such as quartz and feldspar. Minerals have a particular chemical composition and crystal structure. These rocks are made from sands deposited in a river delta. The lines on the rock face run in two directions. The horizontal lines are called bedding planes and show that there were times when the river flow slackened and sand deposition temporarily ceased. Between some of the bedding planes are other lines which slope at a gentle angle, and these represent sandbanks in the river channel. This feature is called cross-bedding, and we'll see it again at marker stones 4 and 5. After the river sands had been turned into a rock by being deeply buried, compressed and cemented, earth movements fractured the brittle rock and caused the vertical cracks, called joints, to develop. The rusty red colour comes from iron, which has been washed through the rock later. The base of the cliff shows the cross bedding and a few layers of coarse grit with rounded quartz pebbles, which were deposited when the river was in flood.
The crags and cliffs along the path are old quarries. The Addingham Edge grit is an excellent building stone because it has regular joints and bedding planes. This made it easy for the quarrymen to break the stone into blocks that could be transported. Press the pause button and walk along this level path for about 100 metres to a good viewpoint over an open, sloping field to your right. Track 4. Wharfdale and its glacier.
On your right, you will see down across Wharfdale, where there are four large lakes now used for recreation and wildlife. They give evidence for the last glaciation of Wharfdale, when the valley floor was filled with sands and gravels from glacial meltwater. These have since been extracted for building, leaving lakes. During the last 30 million years, global climate has been cooling down, culminating in the development of huge ice sheets in the last 1.8 million years. Global temperature has fluctuated since then, resulting in many advances and retreats of ice sheets over northern Europe. Ice sheets grew in cold times in high mountain areas and advanced into the lowlands. However, most of the evidence of early ice advances have been obliterated by later events.
The last glacial stage, called the Devensian, was at a maximum about 17,000 years ago, and ice covered the high ground in the Otley area. As temperatures rose, ice melted and ice sheets became thinner. In the final stages of the glacial period, the thickest ice was confined to the valleys. It would have been possible to stand on Otley Shevin and look over a valley with glaciers moving down Wharfdale and Airedale and meltwater streams filling the valley floors with sands and gravels. The picture on the interpretation board at Surprise View at Marcherstone 8 shows how the landscape of Wharfdale would have looked then. When the ice melted completely, it left behind extensive deposits of glacial till, also known as boulder clay, which was sometimes washed away or modified by meltwater. It is a relatively long way to Marcherstone 3, so you may need to replay the directions a few times. These are provided in Track 5. Track 5. Follow the Vacca Wall. Continue along the path past a picnic bench until you reach a path junction near to a wooden carving. If you turn right and follow the track down for a couple of hundred metres, you will come to the White House Cafe and would need to return the same way to continue on the geology trail. Instead of going down to the White House, turn sharply left and continue steeply up the track. After 100 metres, turn sharply right onto a level path. Walk along the level path for about 700 metres. You will go past the Vacca Wall, which is built from large blocks of sandstone from local quarries and was originally constructed to keep cattle from straying. Continue along this path until you pass through an old dry stone wall. Then follow the muddy path as it bends to the right to reach Marcherstone 3 at grid reference SE1991-4435. Track 6. Great Dib Landslip.
You've reached Marcherstone 3 at Great Dib Landslip. Please do not go too close to the edge, as there's a steep drop below you. The Marcherstone carving shows a goniatite. These were animals that lived in the shallow seas in the Carboniferous period, and their fossils are occasionally found in mudstones dating from this time, about 315 million years ago. You're standing on the Long Ridge sandstone. You've walked up the hill, over the tidal laminates and mudstones overlying the Addingham Edge grit. The mudstones and thin sandstones are very fissile. That means they break into thin sheets very easily, so broken pieces can be washed downslope unless they're protected by a sandstone bed above.
The steep slope, which drops down to Otley, has been caused by landslipping at a time when the climate was still very cold. But after the ice sheet had melted from the top of the Chevin about 14,000 to 12,000 years ago, there was probably still ice in Wharfdale, so there was very little vegetation to stabilise the slope. During the winters, water in the rocks and subsoil would have frozen, but in the summers it melted, and the sandstones at the top of the slope would have been able to slide down a weakness in the lubricated mudstones below. The whole length of Otley Chevin was prone to landslipping because of the steep slope. In places along the Chevin, large boulders have moved downslope, and sometimes uneven ground is visible under the trees. Trees reduce the likelihood of further landslipping because they take water from the ground, so reducing the lubrication in the soil. Their roots stabilise the subsoil and find their way into joints in the solid rock. Follow the muddy path with a remnant stone wall on your right-hand side. After 200 metres, pass through another old stone wall into woodland. Keep going with the edge of the slope on your right. At a path junction at a wooden post, turn sharply left, going uphill through the wood following wooden posts to marker stone 4 at grid reference SE1953-4416. Track 7. Fossil branches on a rock.
At marker stone 4, you can see short lengths of fossilised tree branches on a fallen block next to some crags. The marker stone here has an image of some tree branches. The crags here are made of the doubler stone sandstone which lies above the mudstones that you've just walked across. The main face of the crag shows slump bedding with interesting contortions of the cross-bedding surfaces. As the wet sand of the delta was being covered by more sediment, the water in it was able to escape upwards, distorting the bedding surfaces. This might have happened suddenly, perhaps due to an earth tremor. These features are called soft sediment deformation structures, which are due to dewatering. The largest fallen block has tilted through 90 degrees. We can see this because the bedding planes seen on the side of the block are vertical. Walk behind the largest block to see the bottom surface, which is covered with fossils of tree branches. These would have been deposited on a sandbank in the river when a flood washed tree trunks and branches downstream. The branches were then covered by another layer of sand, which has preserved them as impressions.
Press the pause button and walk uphill to the east, amongst or around these crags for about 100 metres, until you reach marker stone 5 at grid reference SE1959-4417. Track 8. Mossy Crags. At marker stone 5, you can see cross-bedding in doubler stone sandstone. This is highlighted by the moss. The marker stone has a carving, which demonstrates the process of cross-bedding. Cross-bedding is commonly formed in a river channel in which sand grains are being rolled along the bottom by fast-flowing water. The grains avalanche down the front face of sandbanks and settle at an angle of about 15 to 20 degrees. Each cross-bedded set has been eroded by another flood of water, so the top of each sandbank has been washed away, truncating the cross-bedding. There are many fallen blocks of sandstone below the crags. The large blocks probably became detached when Otley Chevin lay under ice during the last glacial maximum about 17,000 years ago. Water beneath the ice sheet soaked the joints in the rock and widened them as it froze. Then, as the ice finally melted about 12,000 years ago, the unsupported blocks were let down onto the slope. Follow the path and walk uphill following timber marker posts. Keep close to the stone wall on your right. At a path junction, turn right and walk towards a pond into the disused Yorkgate Quarry. Follow timber marker posts through an open grassy area for 200 metres and then look for marker stone 6 on your left at grid reference SE1989-4412. Track 9. A very small coal seam.
At marker stone 6, we will show you fossilised tree roots and the Moreton Banks coal seam. Marker stone 6 shows the dimpling caused by fossilised tree roots. Walk from the marker stone across the grass for a few metres towards the east, where you can see some exposed rock. Be careful if you walk onto the sandstone bed, as it is slippery. This exposure shows a thick bed of Dubbler stone sandstone dipping at 24 degrees to the south. The surface, which is a bedding plane, is covered with fossils of tree roots. The sandstone is made of sand composed of fine to medium-sized quartz grains, with a few pink grains of feldspar deposited in a river.
The sandstone bed is overlain by a thin, black, crumbly coal seam, seen to the right in the low bank next to the path. This is the Moreton Banks coal. It's very thin here, but becomes thicker further south, where it's been mined. There is grey clay above and below the coal. This is called fire clay, which is the remains of the soil layers in which grew the trees and ground vegetation that formed the coal. Because this part of the Carboniferous continent was close to the equator, the climate was warm and wet, so tropical rainforest flourished. Dead plant material became trapped in stagnant swamps between river sands when the rivers in the delta changed position during floods. The water, oxygen and hydrogen were driven out of the plant remains, leaving only the carbon in coal seams. Return to the marker stone and retrace your steps until you reach a wooden post at a path junction. Turn right towards the bottom of a quarried sandstone cliff, where you will find marker stone 7 at grid reference SE1993-4420. Track 10. The Variscan Orogeny.
Marker stone 7 marks a point where you can see dipping beds in York Gate Quarry and learn what has caused the beds to tilt. The carving on the marker stone shows a stonemason's hammer and chisel. Shane Green will tell you about how he carved the marker stones for this geological trail.
I'm Shane Green. I'm a local artist, sculptor and painter. I was approached by the Geology Trust to do a stone carving trail for this area. I was inspired by the geological features and the changes as you walk around the Chevin. The 8 marker stones are all specific to the sites. We initially started to carve the stone from the quarry here at Moretop, but we found that some of the stone was a little bit softer than what we'd expected to carve stones that are going to be left in the outdoors. So we then approached Black Hill Quarry. We carved the stone on site, on the Chevin, and then they were transported into locations. Most of the carving was done very rapidly with power tools and then finished with the hand. The entrance to the trail is there's like almost an amalgamation of all of the forms in one, and with the term Variscan Orogeny, which signifies plate collision, which is basically how the Chevin was formed in geological terms. That was 4 days non-stop with using grinding stones and electric power tools. It was a bit of a back-breaking exercise because the stone was already in situ, which was low to the ground. But really, that one took the most amount of time. That took about probably 4 days of stone carving. All the other ones were between 1 and 2 days each.
Thank you, Shane. The Dubbler stone sandstone rock face in front of you is about 4 metres high and marks one end of the quarry. The bedding planes dip at 24 degrees to the south. The rocks were tilted at the end of the Carboniferous period, when there was a major collision between two tectonic plates. This mountain building period is called the Variscan Orogeny and culminated in the uplift of a high mountain range across Europe. This affected southwest England more than the rest of Britain. However, northern England was uplifted into the Pennine Anticline, which is an upfold. So the present Pennines were a range of hills trending north-south from the Midlands to southern Scotland after the end of the Carboniferous period. At the same time, the brittle crust underneath northern England was under tension, so Variscan plate movements caused it to fault and fold. The Wharfdale area was affected by crustal pressure, so the rocks were tilted southwards towards Airedale.
Yorkgate quarries ceased to be used in 1969 after a public campaign against further extraction. The quarry company hoped to excavate further north beyond the ridge, which would have meant the quarry cutting into the scarp slope. The quarry would then have been visible from Otley, and would have spoiled the skyline view from the town. Walk up the narrow, steep path to the top of the quarry face. If the path is too steep and narrow for you, use the path on the right that goes above the quarry face. Both routes will take you onto the main path. Turn right and continue for 200 metres until you see a timber marker post that leads you to the Crags of Surprise View and Marker Stone 8 at grid reference SE2043-4419. Track 11, Surprise View.
You've now reached Surprise View at Marker Stone 8. The carving on the marker stone shows the swirling currents that would have moved quartz pebbles along the bottom of a fast-flowing river. You're standing on the crest of the Otley-Chevin escarpment, formed by the Doubler Stone sandstone. The rocks exposed in the footpath nearby are coarse sandstones with rounded quartz pebbles. The rivers which deposited these sandstones were probably moving fast, as their velocity was great enough to drag pebbles along the bottom of the channel. The steep slope below you, facing north towards Wharfdale, is a scarp face which cuts across the rock beds which dip to the south. If you turn round and look to the south, you can see the gentle slope down towards the towns of Guiseley and Yeadon. This slope is called the dip slope and is shown in the cross-section of Otley-Chevin in the leaflet.
If you're lucky enough to be here on a day when the visibility's good, then you'll see wonderful views in all directions. Facing north, towards Wharfdale, you can see Barden Moor to your left, with the air gap beyond. The sharp peak in the gap is Sharp Haw, and the round peak to its right is Rough Haw. Towards the right, Armscliff Crag stands above gentler slopes. It's made of Armscliff Grit, which is a tougher and more resistant stone than the surrounding rocks. Further to the east is the flat ground of the Vale of York, with the Jurassic escarpment of the North York Moors beyond. In the foreground is the floodplain of the River Wharfe. You may be able to see sharp bends in the River Wharfe, running beside high, long mounds stretching across the valley floor. These mounds at Arthington show where moraines, made of debris carried by the glacier, were deposited. At this time, the advancing and melting of the glacier were in equilibrium, and the glacier snout remained stationary for some time, allowing the debris that it had been carrying to be dropped. Facing south, towards Bradford, across Airedale, you can see Victoria Tower on Castle Hill in Huddersfield, between the two masts of Home Moss to the right and Emley Moor to the left. The moors of the dark peak in the distance are underlain by millstone grit sandstones. In front of you lies Shipley and the suburbs of North Bradford, with Beldon Hill in the foreground to the right. Most of the ground in front of you is underlain by coal measures, which are composed largely of mudstones, with some sandstones and coal seams. The solid rocks are covered by a thin layer of glacial till. To return to East Chevin Quarry Car Park, follow the ridge path eastwards. Then take a flagged path downhill. The flags have been moved from factories or mills in other areas of Yorkshire or Lancashire. Some are covered with ripple marks from small waves, which show that the sandstone was deposited in shallow water. Turn left, down a steep track, until you reach the path you used earlier. Turn right at the wooden carving and retrace your footsteps to the car park, past marker stones 2 and 1.
Thank you for your company on this walk. I hope you've enjoyed exploring the Chevin and finding out about its rocks, fossils and landscapes.